This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
.com.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Merrill Hurst University's new Bachelor of Arts in Media and Film Studies, where you can explore how media in all forms affect not only how we view the world, but how we shape it. You'll learn the power of media and how you can use that power to become a participant in change. Now accepting applications. Details at merrillhurst.edu/KBOO.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know, giving you the tools to destroy billionaire rule. Happy V-Day. Have you got your V on? Portland Rising is happening today, part of the billions. Here's an announcement. Rise with us in Portland. We'll rally at 3 p.m. in Director's Park. That's at 8th and Park Avenue. Well, between 9th and Park anyway. It'll include a flash mob of Break the Chain. At 3:30, we'll march around downtown. The march does not have a permit. And end up at the First Unitarian Church, which is at 12th and Southwest Main in Portland, for dancing, workshops, speakers, tabling by groups, working to end violence against women, food, more. Indoor activities will be happening from 4:15 to 7:30. The Facebook page is 1 Billion Rising PDX. Join for more info on other planned actions. So once again, that's today, 3 p.m., Director's Park, and of course, there is a permit, actually, for the march. It's called the First Amendment. Wouldn't you like to live in a free country? I wonder what that would be like. I wonder what it would be like to, say, not have to worry about cops stomping you if you went out and just expressed your opinion in the streets. I wonder what it would be like to live in a country that is as wealthy as this one and yet doesn't have people living in the streets. Used to know what that was like because that's how old I am. But I want to talk about that. And if you want to get in on the queue, I'm going to do the headlines here first. But the phone number for you to call is 503-231-8187. Headlines: NATO airstrike kills 10 Afghan civilians. This is from John Glazer, is published in antiwar.com. A NATO airstrike killed 10 Afghan civilians, five of them children, in eastern Afghanistan on Wednesday and wounded five other innocents, according to Afghan officials. Quote, foreign forces carried out the attack by themselves without informing us. That's from the governor. He told Reuters four Taliban fighters were also allegedly killed in the strike or associated strikes in the area in the Shigal district of Kunar province, wherever that is. And according to a recent UN report, U.S. attacks and airstrikes have killed hundreds of children in recent years, due notably to the reported lack of precautionary measures and indiscriminate use of force. And departing from the article, also due to the fact that we invaded their country. Returning to the report from antiwar.com, in describing the UN report, the American Civil Liberties Union reported hundreds of children have been killed in attacks and airstrikes by U.S. military forces, and those responsible for the killings have not been held to account, even as the number of children killed doubled from 2010 to 2011. And they write some U.S. military officials are unhappy about the criticism they receive when Afghan children are killed or injured because of U.S. operations, claiming that, and here's that word, insurgents, recruit children to plant bombs, so killing children is actually fair game. and kind of opens our aperture, said Army Lieutenant Colonel Marion Carrington. In addition to looking for military-age males, it's looking for children with potential hostile intent. End quote. Yep. Good old Imperial War still happening. More headlines. I'm sure I've got some headlines here. Yes. Turns out that Christopher Dorner, the rogue LAPD cop, who complained about racism in a way that resonated throughout the country and the world, was attacked and executed with flamethrowers. Here are some of the quotes that have been reported on different news agencies that came from the police scanner, which was live on the internet. It's been recorded. Some of the quotes are, "Deploy the burner through the turret." "Seven burners have deployed and we have a fire." Someone yelled, "Burn that effing house down." And then the San Bernardino Police Department came out, Sheriff's Department came out and said that that was not intentional. It was just tear gas. And, you know, they're obviously lying. So I think that's an interesting thing to talk about. That whole thing, that whole 21st century Nat Turner thing, you want to talk about that? Because I saw some pretty scared cops. I mean, that's something that really stuck with me. Whatever you think of Chris Dorner, and I don't think much of him because he killed the offspring of someone he was mad at. That's gross, but or he allegedly did. That's what I'm supposed to say. That's the right thing. He allegedly killed them. And there was this terrific, terrified reaction. That's the thing that really got my attention. Reminded me of 93. Wasn't it 93? Has it been 20 years? Rodney King, and I was working in Pink Collar Ghetto. This is before I transitioned. I was working in Milwaukee. I came to work, and everyone was just, like, terrified. And I was just like, what? And they're like, "Did you see the news?" I was like, "Yeah." And this is important. I was like, "You talking about the riots in L.A.?" And they're like, "Yeah." Because there's this, you know, the other side of white guilt is white terror. That the people that we whiteys have been squashing all these years are just kind of get sick of it and rise up. And God knows what'll happen. And I think there was a whole lot of that in the Chris Dorner incident. And if you need proof, well, look at those. What was that? 30 bullets that hit the back of a pickup truck that had a couple of women delivering delivering newspapers. There's a pickup truck. Oh my God. You know, shoot the whole clip. Apparently they did. And, geez, that's so hysterical. Are we racist or anything? Do you think? 503-231-8187. Oh my God. Anyway, back to headlines. A huge section of roofing covering part of the defunct nuclear power plant at Chernobyl has collapsed under the weight of snow. This from the dailymail.co.uk. You won't find it in the U.S. news rolls. Officials immediately denied any threat of radiation, even though the accident involved a cover on part of the workings of reactor number 4, which exploded in 1986 in the world's worst atomic disaster until Fukushima. Quote, "There are no safety hazards. The radiation situation of the plant and in the exclusion zone is normal. No one was hurt," said the administration at the former Soviet plant, and we all believe them, because nuclear plant operators never lie, especially not about nuclear accidents. They wouldn't do that. Well, speaking of, Pilgrim Nuclear Power Station in Plymouth once again lost power Sunday after having it restored for several hours following an off-site outage Friday night. Three diesel generators are now providing backup power to the facility's safety system, said Carol Whiteman, a spokesman for Entergy Corporation, the Louisiana corporation that owns Pilgrim. And that's from Boston.com. Actually, it's a little out of date. The plant's back online, which is good because in a nuclear power plant of that nature, you have a river of water running through it, and they need off-site power to keep the water going. Guess what happens when the water stops? It has something to do with the phrase, kaboom! The plant was first shut down late Friday when it lost its off-site power supplies in the middle of the snowstorm. Electricity returned to Pilgrim at 10:55 a.m. on Sunday, according to Entergy. It went back out later that afternoon. Whiteman could not say exactly when Pilgrim would be back online. Well, it is back online, but a leaky safety valve caused the plant to shut down in January, and it didn't go kaboom, and we're all just very glad. But, you know, at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and at the Pilgrim Nuclear Station and all the pro-nuclear media, they don't say the word kaboom. I don't like to say that. But, you know, there was Chernobyl, and there was Three Mile Island, and there was Fukushima three times. Number to call, 503-231-8187. From Caracas, Radio Havana, Cuba, reports Venezuelan journalist and politician Jose Vicente Rangel said in Caracas that the opposition is preparing a real coup and warned the plan is part of a well-orchestrated conspiracy. In his regular column published in the newspaper Ultimas Noticias, Rangel said that the right wing is a threat to constitutional order and the victories achieved by the people of Venezuela. Journalists also denounced the opposition for refusing to acknowledge the legitimacy of Venezuela's authorities and said that they are carrying out a campaign of slanders against individuals and institutions, cruelly seeking advantage from the life-threatening illness of President Hugo Chavez. This from Guardian.co.uk. Victims of the epidemic of sex and child abuse scandals that erupted under Pope Benedict reacted bitterly to his resignation, either charging the outgoing pontiff with being directly complicit in a criminal conspiracy to cover up the thousands of pedophilia cases that have come to light over the past 3 years, or with failing to stand up to reactionary elements in the church resolved to keep the scandals under wraps. Departing from this text, remember we had Bishop and then Cardinal Levada here, call him Darth Levada, who engaged in the pedophile shuffle. Now he'll be one of those selecting a new pope. Isn't that nice? And returning to the article, from Benedict's native Germany to the USA, abuse victims and campaigners criticized an 8-year papacy that struggled to cope with the flood of disclosures of crimes and abuse rampant for decades within the church. And just in time to add to that news, a judge in Argentina, according to World War IV report and also according to BBC, accuses the Vatican of fingering two priests for execution by the Guerra Sucia. Here's the text. A court in Argentina's western province of La Rioja found February 13th, that's yesterday, that the country's Catholic Church was complicit with crimes committed during the dictatorship's dirty war on leftist dissidents between 1976 and 1983. Remember that? The generals? The judgment said that the church hierarchy turned a blind eye to abuses that it clearly knew of, while some members collaborated more actively. It further stated that the hierarchy remains indifferent to this past today. The judgment came in a case concerning the slaying of Carlos de Dios Murias and Gabriel Longavija, two members of the Movement of Third World Priests, a grouping of left-wing Catholic clergy who disappeared in 1976. Their mutilated bodies dumped near the train tracks. Three retired military officers were given life terms in the case. So, my question, 503-231-8187, is it time to ban this ancient source of fraud, pederasty, and death as a terrorist organization? What are we going to do about the Catholic Church? Or should I just run for Pope? Here's an idea. Teresa Mitchell for Pope. Here's my platform. We'll return the world's wealth to the world's poor, starting with the victims of priest predators. We'll turn St. Peter's Square into the world's largest roller derby rink, or maybe an ice rink, with the Pope Mobile converted to a Zamboni, and I'll drive it. Practicing my wave, tossing condoms and birth control, no more forced birth policy, abortion clinics at every church basement. My qualifications, I look better in a big red dress and a silly hat than any pope you can find. I'll be Pope Joan II, Pope Joan Paul George Ringo. Tell your local priest you support the big anarcho-socialist transsexual Teresa Mitchell for Pope. 503-231-8187, and Elliot's on the air.
Yes, I have a comment, I guess, about quality control and progressive fairness at KBOO.
Quality control.
And I'll put aside, you know, the comments about trying to lend some moral support to a trained mad dog cop killing machine. But if you look in the archives, some weeks ago you said that the Taliban were freedom fighters.
Yep, they're fighting for the freedom
and
of their country.
Here's the point. Here's the extremely simple point. And your show is supported by, you know, like the gay yellow pages. If you actually took some of your TriMet vacation and you went with your KBOO boyfriend on vacation to Kandahar, we could set up a fantastic multimedia cable event in which, you know, you had a mini cam and we set up a Skype connection to cable, and we could all synchronize our watches and see how many minutes it would take before someone in the Taliban decapitated you as a transsexual.
Why would I go there and let them decapitate me as a transsexual? I don't care about their transsexual rules. It's not my country.
They're haters.
But you support the war, right?
They hate women. They hate gays. They hate Jews. They have a list of people they hate that's longer than the arm of Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Well, that's very true. You know, that's terrible. And we have haters in this country, too. We have the Ku Klux Klan and the Nazis and all kinds of nasty haters.
Yeah, but they don't have any pretense to taking national power. The Taliban had national power for almost a decade, and they have
that's their problem, isn't it?
Taking it back.
You scared of Taliban? Are you?
Am I what about the Taliban?
Are you scared of Taliban or Taliban coming around your place?
I'm not personally scared of them because they don't have the logistics to get over here.
Right on,
but
exactly.
They took over in Portland.
So we invaded their country. How could that possibly be right?
People in Portland.
What right do we have to judge them?
We live in a globalized era in which, you know, people produce documentaries about the oppressive generals in Burma. Or for that matter, you know, Pinochet in Chile.
We oppress the hell out of black people. How would you like it if the Taliban came over here and started shooting the place up or bombing because we put black people into jail for the things that white people get away with?
We have social movements and legal procedures to try to, as it says in the Constitution, to redress grievances.
Well, so do they. They have Sharia law, but you know what? It's their country.
Did not allow redress of grievances.
You support the war, though, right?
I support the law.
Well, you should go over there because they really need people.
I mean, I've been arrested for civil disobedience. I don't always support the law.
They need people there to oppress the people of Afghanistan, and you would be welcome, even if you were just cleaning up pie pans.
Look, I'm a Jewish intellectual. I would not be welcome in Kandahar, and that's the whole point. I don't support the government in Afghanistan. It's incredibly corrupt. But the Taliban are, you know, an order of magnitude worse. And to say on cable that they're freedom fighters.
They are. They're fighting for the freedom of the country. They have a right to defend their country against invaders, and we invaded.
Well, virtually everybody invaded at one point or another because it's a nonstop.
Why can't we all just get along with invading
over there? I mean,
hey, are you okay if I invade your house? You got anything nice over there?
I'm
going to discover it like Chris Columbus.
They're one of the poorest, most disorganized countries on the entire planet. They have the highest infant mortality rate.
Higher than Mississippi?
That's an interesting question. I'm pretty sure that the infant mortality rate of Mississippi, which is bad, is considerably better than in Afghanistan because the Taliban types don't care about the lives of women. I mean, they just consider them, you know, targets of impregnation.
Yeah, so we blow them up. You know, I appreciate you calling in, and I get your point. What you're saying is that you're offended that I would be, so I guess, disloyal as to say that the Taliban are freedom fighter, but I'm just pointing out that they live over there. We invaded them. We didn't have a right to invade.
Well, I made a simple
they got a right to fight back.
They would cut your head off.
So?
You specifically.
So what? I'm not going
so
there.
What?
Yeah, so what? It's their problem.
All right. Alex, you know, we've got that on the record. Okay. You want them to cut your head off.
No, I don't care what their attitude is. I mean,
I'll let other people speak.
I'm against imperialism is my point. And I think that's the way, I think that when the press reports them as insurgents, they're lying because they didn't surge in from anywhere. They lived there. We went and bombed the place. And I think they're disgusting, sure. Likewise with North Korea. That's their country. They are disgusting in many ways. They're funny in other ways. And we got no right to blow them up. What we've done is, you know, since blowing them up in the in the late 40s and early 50s to the point that General Curtis LeMay complained that there were no more targets to bomb. And that's how vicious that was. We've been threatening them all these years with these huge, huge, incredible, record-breaking multiple war games. And, you know, they're kind of crazy little rabbits over there, and that's their problem. Who cares? You know, the crazy little rabbits over here don't have the right to go bomb the crazy little rabbits over there. Number to call, 503-231-8187. And actually, I love getting calls like that. It's really great to get some opposition. Emily's on the air.
I'm not opposition. Oh, darn. I'm trying to find out the name of the married couple that writes on Afghanistan for Elliot so he can find out about just who funds the Taliban, because that's probably should be of a lot of interest to someone like Elliot, is how the Taliban came to power and who is currently funding them. So I'm going to get on my Google train or my Bing box or whatever it is, and I'm going to find out, and I'm going to call back with that information.
Well, I know who was funding them in 1979. It was the Cuban Invasion Agency.
I think that they continue to fund them. I think that this couple, who I wanted to say Elizabeth Gould, but that's somebody else. So I'm going to find out those names and call back. I was bad. I called before I had the information.
All right.
I was just so moved to call when I heard him say that. And don't lose your head, Teresa. We love you too much. Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy VD to you. And remind everyone, 1 billion rising. It's happening today, 3 p.m. downtown Portland, 8th and Park, 9th and Park, that park that's over there. You'll find it. Back to headlines. And by the way, if you'd like to call in, 503-231-8187. Project Censored reports that the Federal Bureau of Investigation is responsible for instigating the majority of terrorist plots in the United States. The agency has developed a network of over 15,000 spies to infiltrate various communities in an attempt to uncover terrorist plots. However, these moles are actually assisting and encouraging people to commit crimes. Many informants receive cash rewards up to $100,000 per case. Did you know that? So, as Peg Millett says, the guy who can get you the dynamite is the FBI agent. Also from Project Censored, an audit of the first Federal Reserve reveals $16 trillion, that's with a T, trillion dollars, $16,000 billion in secret bailouts to major American and European banks during the height of the global financial crisis from 2007 to 2010. Morgan Stanley received up to $107 billion. Citigroup took $99 billion. Bank of America, $91 billion. And it goes on and on. According to data obtained through, was it available in the press? Did our open, transparent American government tell us who they are giving our billions to? No. It's from a Bloomberg Freedom of Information Act request. Months of litigation and an act of Congress revealed this. The financial institutions were secretly receiving loans, meanwhile claiming in their public reports to have ample cash reserves. The Federal Reserve has neither explained how they legally justified several of the emergency loans, nor how they decided to provide assistance to certain firms, but not others. And departing from the article, the end result is that the same institutions that crashed the economy, remember John Paulson, remember that name, please, who bought billions in short sales in the same mortgages that he was setting up as derivatives, in other words, bet against his own products, crashed the mortgage betting scheme intentionally, made billions doing that. The same institutions that crashed the economy were rewarded with loans at such low interest, these loans that I'm talking about, that they amount to giveaways of billions. When you loan $1 trillion, at 1% interest, and somebody else can get 2, or any fraction thereof, and just using those numbers as examples, that means you get billions of dollars. The simultaneous dilution of the dollar supply has weakened the dollar worldwide, thereby threatening a new crash as other countries seek alternatives to the dollar. How betrayed can you possibly get by the Bush and Obama administrations, and by all the corporate-owned Congress? Well, I guess we're finding out. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Hi, Wade.
Hello, Teresa. How you doing?
Doing well. Yourself?
Great. Just wanted to make a quick comment on the previous caller. Yep, there are people right here in America that'll cut your head off. So let's invade them first before we go telling everyone else how to live.
Well, okay, I like that.
All right. Keep up the good work. Thank you.
Thank you. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. I started the show saying, what would it be like to live in a free society? And I think KBOO is a good example of that because, you know, on KBOO, we can talk about this stuff pretty much however we want and, you know, not cut each other's heads off. And I think we've got a long way to go. And I mean, I know we got a long way to go. I remember one particular protest. I was racking my brains trying to think which one it was during the whole Occupy thing. And I was doing my job driving a bus downtown and found a sea of cops. And the sea of cops was preventing protesters from walking where they wanted to walk and basically blocking them and threatening them. And the sea of cops was wearing those plastic suits that we call the Darth Vader outfits. And it was just the ugliest damn thing you ever saw. And I was just spitting mad. I could scarcely control myself. I could control the bus. You know, it's easy enough. Point it straight ahead. Watch where you're going. Put your foot on the brake. But, oh my God. I considered just locking the bus down in the middle of all of it, walking away from that and my job. And I'm not sure that I'm happy with myself that I decided to keep going because, you know, they get you. They get you with a mortgage and people who need your support and that paycheck. And I decided right then wasn't the time to go absolutely berserk, but I sure felt like it because you have free speech in this country as long as you don't say anything that upsets the powers that be, which is to say you don't have free speech. I mean, if you don't have the free speech to say the most obnoxious thing you can possibly think of, you don't have free speech. Now, I understand that free speech doesn't extend to threats, credible threats. For example, I've long argued that when you get a statement from known death squads like the Klan or the Nazis, those are threats. They're threats because those are organizations that have a long history of killing people, and the very fact of their existence and their symbols are there to intimidate people and to make people understand that they are likely to die at their hands. But that was never true of Occupy. Occupy was specifically a nonviolent movement. And despite the fact that a provocateur here or there busted a window, it was a very and remains a very nonviolent movement. So we don't have free speech in this country. And oh my God, I've had such a good time talking. I've used up my 30 minutes. And Linda Olsen-Osterlund, thank God, is here to take the helm. And so I know that you will want to stay right here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor an evening with Scott Silber, speaking on Threat to Themselves and Others, Intervention on Corporate Addiction to Power, Before It's Too Late. He'll be in Portland on Sunday, February 17th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, 1011 Southwest 12th Avenue, at the corner of 12th and Salmon. Scott Silber is National Director of National Intervention, who are calling for a 28th constitutional amendment to eliminate corporate personhood. More information about Scott and the event can be found at kboo.fm/ScottSilber2013.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to A Deeper Look. I'm your host, Linda Olsen-Osterlund. My topic is Yemen Today. For the American public, when you say Yemen, it's quickly associated with drone attacks and al-Qaeda-like terrorists. Not so quickly brought to mind is the ongoing struggle for democracy still being waged on the streets of Yemen's cities. The struggle has been bursting forth again as the nation nears its first anniversary of the ouster of former Yemeni President Ali Abdullah Saleh. This past week has seen tens of thousands out in the streets renewing their demand for a real democratic state free of foreign intervention. I've got the perfect guest to bring us up to date. His name is Ibrahim Khatabi. He is a Yemeni human rights activist and has worked for the Center for Constitutional Rights since 2008 as a legal worker for the Guantanamo Global Justice Initiative. Fluent in Arabic, he's traveled widely in the Middle East, and prior to joining the CCR, he interned with Human Rights Watch in their terrorism counterterrorism section. He was last on this show in May of 2012. Thank you for joining me, Ibrahim Khatabi.
Thank you for having me, Linda.
Really happy to have you again. Ibrahim, as I said in the introduction, this past week or so, the democracy movement in Yemen has hit international news again with massive demonstrations. At the same time, the current president, Abd al-Rab Mansour al-Hadi, I think if I said that name right, has announced the scheduling of the National Dialogue Conference, which is a formal governmental part of the transitional process to democracy, something that included the original election of Hadi, an election that was unusual in many ways in that there was only one candidate and you had only one choice. So, Ibrahim, bring us up to date on the democracy movement. What's been happening and how and why has it burst forth into the news again?
Well, a few days ago, there was the second anniversary of the Yemeni uprising, which took place on February 11th, 2011. That's when the uprising started in Yemen. Recently, what's going on in the country, actually, the political process somehow is jammed and there is nothing happening and the transitional process in Yemen.